afternoon, everyone. This is Tanya Mack, and I want to welcome you to the Doctor's Roundtable, a new radio show that will feature a topic every week and a seat at the table to discuss that topic. Today with me, I have four guests. I have Dr. David Redding. Dr. Redding is one of Atlanta's premier allergists, and he's been featured on the Learning Channel before, also on the Weather Channel, probably during allergy season, right?
That's right.
We'll hear from him. Our topic today is healthcare consumerism, and we all will be discussing our different points of view about things we hear in everyday conversation. Unfortunately, today we can go to dinner parties and we can sit in our businesses and we will hear we're all paying more, we don't know where we're headed in healthcare, we have to get educated about how we spend our dollars and how we pick providers and kind of get a little smarter about how we're doing. So we see a lot more people paying attention to healthcare rather than just what's my copay today. So we also have with us today a consumer, Ms. Kim Hedzik. Kim is a writer in Atlanta, freelance writer. She writes on a number of different topics, and healthcare is one of them. And Kim is a mom of three. Interestingly enough, moms make about 86% of the healthcare decisions in the United States. So Kim will be giving us her perspective on how she chooses and what she thinks about and some of her struggles. And hopefully, Kim, some of your success stories.
There are a few.
Very good. All right. And then we also have Mr. John Lentz with us today, and he is the chairman of MedServe Global. One of the trends that has come out of healthcare consumerism is not only do we try to figure out how we're spending our healthcare dollars here, but many of us are starting to travel outside of the United States for healthcare and inside. I think you'll be talking domestically and internationally about how we are making some different choices. So let's start with you, Dr. Redding. And if you could just tell us a little bit more about your practice and how you spend your time, and then we'll talk to you about your perspective in private practice, because I think most people's experience is actually during the year going to their patient private practices as outpatients. So probably you're 80% of what we do rather than go into the hospital. So tell us first about your practice.
The name of my practice is Redding Allergy and Asthma Center. I'm an allergy specialist, and we also specialize in asthma. We see pediatric and adult patients for all issues related to allergies, as well as asthma and several other diseases.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And so I know you're a busy practice. You're over by 75 and Paces Ferry Road is kind of where you're located. But I know there's not many of you in town, so you probably see patients from all over.
That's right. As allergists, we see patients frequently up to 45 minutes or an hour away. And especially because we're located right off the interstate, we get a lot of people traveling a while to see us.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing one thing that you're dealing with, especially over the past couple of years that we've had more economic strife, is more self-pay patients, more patients with high deductibles. Is that right?
And that's exactly right.
Okay. And so what kind of what do they tell you when they come in? I'm sure that you're dealing with some issues like, how much is it going to cost me? What am I going to have to pay? People are more worried than they are. And they're probably, you know, we talked before about they're kind of confused, even if they have insurance, about what is the difference between a copay, a deductible, coinsurance. And I think people get confused about what their coverage is, even if they have it. And they're worried about pricing if they don't. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, we are seeing higher deductible plans on average than were in existence in the 90s and even 5 or 6 years ago. When somebody has a high deductible plan, you need to be more aware of how much you're going to owe at the doctor's office for the visit, as well as any procedures that are done that day or on a subsequent day, such as a radiology imaging procedure, especially CAT scans and MRIs, which are very expensive. So we certainly get more questions about how much will this cost me, and it is very important that you know what your deductible is and where you are during the year in terms of meeting that deductible. So usually by November, you have paid some money into the deductible so that you may not be that far from meeting your deductible, but oftentimes early part of the year, January through March, you may not have paid much at all into your deductible. So it's a good idea to know where you stand on that. It's also important to know whether or not you have any coinsurance. The term coinsurance means how much you have to pay even after you've met the deductible up to a certain number. Most coinsurances are between 10 and 30%, usually 10 or 20%. Some people may not have any coinsurance at all. It may be 0%. And even with coinsurance, there are frequently out-of-pocket maximums that protect you from running up huge medical costs during the year. So the most important things to know are, what are your copays? And your copay may vary. It may be $40 to see your internist or pediatrician, but it may be $60 to see a subspecialist, such as an allergist or a pulmonologist or a cardiologist. So it's a good idea to know what your copay is, whether or not you have coinsurance, and what your deductible is, and have an idea of where you are in terms of meeting that deductible.
Very good. So I know that when I would go to the doctor, even myself now today, it used to be I was worried about copay. Now I'm worried about how much I'll know. And I know just on the consumer side, a lot of patients are kind of hesitant to talk to their doctor's office about how much this will cost up front, because we just want to be taken care of, right? So I know one of the things your practice does, you're very technology-oriented in your practice, and I think one of the things that you do differently is that for patients that do inquire, you're pretty open, and in fact, you have technology in your office to pretty quickly ping exactly where they are in the deductible and actually estimate before they come back what their responsibility would be. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. With the internet now, it makes it easier to check an individual's benefits and see where they are in terms of meeting their deductible. There's the other way, it's just by calling the insurance company. Either way, you can find the information out. But with the better technology on the internet, we can find it out quicker. And we can always answer, give a patient a rough idea of how much it will cost that's not any more than a small amount of money off. Mm-hmm. So if your doctor's office can't give you a good idea of how much you're going to owe, then you definitely need to ask them to investigate it and call you back within a few days. They may not be able to answer the question the morning that you're in the office, but they should be able to give you an answer within a few days. And if it's an office that has taken advantage of this technology, they can usually answer the question within an hour, or maybe even within 5 minutes. Mm-hmm.
I think another thing that is a key point in dealing with outpatient visits, and maybe inpatient too, is just a lot of patients don't understand the concept of in-network and out-of-network. So there's HMOs where you have to kind of go in a closed system to see a provider. Then there's networks where you have some choices. But even if you have insurance and you have a hefty copay, say if you had a $10,000 deductible, and you still are going to make choices and make payments, whenever you do reach over that, there still is that percent you might owe, and it's going to be greater, right, if you're out of network being seen than if you're in network, right?
That's correct, and that's extremely important to determine whether or not the doctor's office is in network or out of network. And even more importantly, if you're having a very expensive procedure such as a surgery that requires that to be done at a surgery center, it's very important to know whether or not the anesthesiologist as well as the surgery center is in network with your insurance or not. Because even though you may have out-of-network benefits, which will pay some part of the cost of the surgery, or the amount you owe may be much, much, much greater than the amount they pay. So you could easily get hit with a $15,000 surgery bill and the insurance company may only pay $2,000 of that if you're out of network, and you may owe $15,000. So it's important for any outpatient doctor to know whether or not you're in network. It's even more important if you're having surgery or an expensive procedure.
Right, good point. So it sounds like even though you went to medical school not to handle all this business stuff, for the sake of your patients, you've had to really become educated yourself and be comfortable speaking with them so they don't have the worry of the finances as a surprise, doing a lot of it up front.
That's exactly right. It's important for people to know that doctors actually don't get trained on all these business aspects of medicine or even anything about health insurance during medical school or even residency training. And if you ask doctors these questions, some doctors know a lot more than other doctors. Usually if the practice has a lot of other administrators working there, then the doctor may actually know less than if it's a small practice where the doctor handles more of the business side. So it's certainly okay, and you should not be afraid or reluctant to ask a doctor about financial questions, but just know that some doctors may be able to answer your question much better than others.
Yep, I appreciate that. Kim, let's move on to you. So you're our consumer representative here. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you're thinking these days, and maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you're thinking differently than you were today when you have to make healthcare choices for your family?
Yes. 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even a little longer than that, we had pretty good insurance. And even though we had a high deductible, and I think it might have been like $7,000 or $8,000 in 1 year, we would usually reach that by maybe June. And so my secret weapon was to hold off on most things that could be held off until June. And once I saw we met that deductible, boy, my kids were going in and they're getting stuff done.
So you had to prioritize your high dollar things for later in the year and hope they made it.
Exactly. Wow. And, you know, if the ear infection could wait a month, then we just wait. So, right. Yeah, that was my secret weapon and it worked. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, having said that, things come up between January and June, and I was very careful to stay in network. I was not afraid to talk to my providers. I would tell them directly if something was too expensive. I'd ask for them to maybe help me finance that. You know, I said, oh, wow, it's going to be X dollars. Is there a chance we could pay that on a monthly? And some doctors were very flexible, and those were the doctors we would see. And, you know, others couldn't or wouldn't, and we would probably move on if need be. Yeah. So,
Dr. Redding, what in your practice, do you make arrangements with? Is that a more common thing that you see as well, having to make payment arrangements for patients these days compared to 4 or 5 years ago?
Yes, we certainly can make payment arrangements with cash or check if you want to pay outside the insurance system. Certainly, if you don't have insurance, all doctors will give cash discounts, usually significant cash discounts, especially if the patient agrees to just paying for the full service up front that day and not receive a bill in the mail. You can often get a little bit off your bill if you pay up front. And most doctor's offices will do payment plans frequently anywhere from 1 to 3 months mm-hmm. to separate the cost if the person doesn't want to pay for the whole thing that day.
Very good. So, Kim, sounds like you had a strategy for the old times. Has anything changed?
Mm-hmm. Well, I still use that strategy if I can. And I think I've become more savvy in finding physicians. And, you know, I use any resources that I can. There's Yelp, and there's just the old-fashioned asking people who they go to, and just trying to find those providers that are willing to work with you in times when we've had no insurance, and just also in times when you do, but your deductible is very high.
You know, we talk a lot about, it used to be when I worked in medical practices, the word of mouth was the number one way that a lot of physicians found new business. Now word of mouth is kind of digital. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting that you brought up social media mm-hmm. sites as a way that you actually help find
right.
and drive your choices.
I do, because they're anecdotal, and I can really read about what it was like for that particular person. And they may have shared that same need or concern that I had. And I can mm-hmm. say, oh, you know what? That's exactly what's wrong. I like that, the way they handle that mm-hmm. situation. I'll call that doctor. I might not choose him ultimately, but I'm going to at least check it out. Mm-hmm. It requires a lot more research now, I think, is what I'm finding. You know, before you got your little medical card, you went to the doctor, you didn't think about whether they were in network or out of network. The bill would come, you'd pay the bill. Now, you know, I'm just much more vigilant about where I'm going, how much is it going to be, how long am I going to have to pay it, and then, of course, do I like the physician and can I work with them and can they work with me?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any success stories that kind of come to mind that you really had to dig down to really find the right solution and really had to kind of shop around, if you would, and what the results of that were?
When we first moved here, we did not have health insurance and I needed a dental procedure. And I did receive a coupon in the mail for a discount on a cleaning, so I went to that particular dental provider. And come to find out, I needed a filling. And the quote was fairly high, over $1,000, $1,400, I think it was, something in that area. And that just wasn't money that I had at that point. So I asked around. I found another dentist who, shall we say, you know, wasn't as current or modern as this particular dental practice. There was no flat screen to entertain me while I had my filling, and there certainly wasn't a fancy little coffee maker, so I didn't get to enjoy a latte. But my tooth was filled, and I paid about a fraction, almost half of the price, because I was willing to ask around, willing to go to a dentist that was not on the beaten path and still could do the job.
Did you feel like you sacrificed quality in your tooth, or you just felt like you
no,
got
I didn't.
A good value?
I got
Sounds
a good
like
value.
You felt like you got a good value.
I think I got a good value because I was willing to research it. You know, again, I was just willing to go a little deeper, dig a little deeper than just to say, okay, $1,400, let's go.
Yeah. You know. I think that's another effect of healthcare consumerism over the past several years has been that there used to be a lot of patient loyalty. With doctor groups, you could have the same patients for years and years and years. And as insurance companies have taken on more control of where their plan is, so goes the network of providers. And so I think that a lot more, that's a perfect example of a lot more patients saying, you know, there's other considerations that are at the top of my list, my pocketbook being one. I still have to get the quality, but
But I can shop around.
You can shop. It's a choice you have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now the tools that we have with social media make it much, much easier for you.
It's easier. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's move on to John. John basically comes to us from MedServe Global. John has over 30 years experience in a variety of business and technology areas. He also works as an advisor on the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism and serves on the faculty of their Consumerism University. So you are really the expert in the room on healthcare consumerism, John, and welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So why don't you first talk to us about just a few trends that you see in healthcare consumerism, being in the trenches here, a couple of trends that you see that you deal with and hear about on a regular basis.
You bet. You know, when we first started getting into this about 5 years ago, the healthcare increases in cost were three times a consumer price index. And that started causing a lot of trouble for companies and for individuals. You know, for many, many years, we've had low copays, low out-of-pockets, and when someone told us to go do something, go somewhere and do that, we went there and did that, and someone else paid for it. And with these increases in costs, companies began more and more to shift the cost over to employees. We're seeing employees right now with out-of-pockets as high as $25,000.
Wow.
And when you have an average workforce wage of $35,000 a year, that's virtually unsustainable. And so we have to teach our people how to be consumers again. Mm-hmm. And part of that responsibility rests with the consumer themselves, but part of it also rests with the company that's providing that benefit plan. And so as time has gone on and now healthcare reform has come about, there are a number of infrastructural issues that are coming into play. Requirements to cover certain things, to expand access, but the Affordable Care Act isn't really affordable. According to the Office of Management and Budget and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, we'll see a doubling of healthcare costs between now and 2021.
Not the direction we wanted to go.
Not the direction we wanted to go. And we're going to throw another 30 million people into a healthcare system that hadn't been there before. So what's that going to do to our availability and access? And so for us, we think that healthcare consumerism falls across many different areas. So first of all, education. People need access to good information. Like Dr. Redding was saying, he needs his patients to understand what the transparency of price is. And he needs to understand that too. Mm-hmm. It's not very easy in our systems these days. Mm-hmm. So more and more people are starting to ask for transparency of price. Many times, healthcare information together with social media can combine for the personal touch as well as evidence-based information. So having a medical library in a system where you can also talk to people is important. Mm-hmm. Access and affordability. Different doctors have different pricing. So a doctor in one office, right next door to another doctor in another office, the difference in cost can be significant. And that's, again, where the price transparency comes mm-hmm. in. So being able to have sort of a travelocity of medicine where you can compare doctors side by side based on their credentials, the publications they've authored, where they went to school, and also what they charge for certain things is going to be very, very important as we move into the future. That's something that MedServe Global has done. Mm-hmm. Added to that, over 70% of the cost of healthcare in our country comes from lifestyle disease. So health and wellness becomes critical.
Obesity, right.
And, you know, it would be nice if everybody did what they were supposed to do just because they were supposed to do it. Doesn't work that way. And so using the science of behavioral incentives, companies and organizations can now help people go to the places where they need to go, have the sort of wellness programs, health risk assessments, healthy behaviors, and so forth. And they incent them with awards that they can redeem on a shopping mall, for example. So if you take it all together, education, access and affordability, and then wellness and incentives, that's really where healthcare consumerism needs to go.
Mm-hmm. So we're seeing quite a few options. Actually, everything from workplace clinics are popping up in some big self-insured companies, Can you speak to the self-insurance market? Because I know some of the industry leaders have said, I can't even afford that anymore. I'm going to do my own thing. And I know you're very involved in that kind of.
Well, that's very common. Mm-hmm. That's very common. Actually, of those companies that are 1,000 employees and larger, over 95% are self-insured. What that means is the company creates a pool of funds from which they pay claims. And then at some certain cap, they have insurance to cover their risk. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, a lot of people don't realize it because they just, you know, the benefit plan doesn't really represent that, but it's the company paying their claims. And so as companies have to pay claims, it comes right out of their pocket. So what are they going to do? They're going to increase deductibles. They're going to increase copays. They're going to require things like wellness programs to help drive better health so that over a period of time, they can see better health in their workforce and lower health claims as a result. Mm-hmm. And so price transparency, again, becomes very important. And so does alternate options.
Mm-hmm. So like in the workplace environment, you mentioned healthy lifestyles. You know, like it would be great if we all just did it, but we don't. But I know a lot of employers, in addition to just going the self-insured route, they're taking the additional step of putting workplace clinics in where they can support smoking cessation programs, monitor weight loss programs, keep you healthier so those same claims don't escalate and you're healthier longer and not having the problem, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And coupled with a proper wellness program, these workplace clinics can be very, very effective because what happens is they provide either a premium differential, meaning I pay $100 more a month if I don't get my health risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And then they can also incorporate social wellness components. So these would be solutions where employees come in, they participate in challenges and contests that the HR department or some provider creates. And so things like walkathons and weight loss programs, how many fruits and vegetables servings do you get a day? And then you get paid points for that, and you can redeem those points for merchandise. Mm-hmm. So these all taken together as an integrated approach is going to contribute to lower cost for both employers and their employees and also an improved health environment.
Right. Now, John, let's move on to the people that are not covered and some of the options that they look for, including going outside of the country. So why don't you just touch a little bit on medical tourism and your experience both domestically and internationally in that arena?
Well, the way I look at medical tourism is really medical travel because it doesn't matter if they're going across town, across the country, or outside of the country for care. They're all going to be looking for the same thing. They're going to be looking for high quality and lower cost. So it may be, for example, with HealthGate, people may find an option on HealthGate's site that enables them to go across town and find a lower cost provider. By the same token, MedServe provides programs for employers that are wraparound. So the employee has the option to go to the local provider. And in many cases, when we start talking about medical travel, a lot of it's going to be related to surgery. And many people don't realize this, but the surgical cost of the provider facilities is the bulk of the cost. We had a woman that didn't have insurance, and she came to us for help. A local hospital was asking over $50,000 just for the hospital stay that she was going to have to
not
have.
Not even the surgeon.
Not even the surgeon.
No didn't anesthesia. Didn't include
any of that. Mm-hmm. And she went down to one of our facilities in Costa Rica, and she had an ovarian cyst removed. Here, they were saying she had to have a 9-inch incision. We did it laparoscopically there. She paid roughly $10,500. She was in and out very quick. She didn't have the recovery period and the risk factors that go with a major surgery that requires a 9-inch incision. And when she came back and talked to her gynecologist about it, they were amazed, and they were impressed by the quality and the results. So she got better quality at a U.S. accredited hospital with U.S. trained surgeon and paid a fraction of the cost she would have had to pay here. Mm-hmm. So that also works for employers. With a wraparound program, these employers can save between 40% and 80% on major procedures, and the employee pays nothing with the right benefit structure, with incentives and so forth. And then there's a second layer. A lot of people are traveling for things that are elective or not covered under the benefit plan, aesthetic procedures like cosmetic surgery and dental implants, bariatric treatments, fertility treatments. All of these things are extremely expensive here, so people can have the capability to go somewhere else for a fraction of the cost, pay for their trip, have a nice vacation, and they come home looking great.
Right. I know a friend of mine went to Mexico to have bariatric surgery. She ended up having exactly the same result, and ultimately, that she would have probably here in the United States. She was very happy with her experience. So, Kim, interesting enough, from a consumer perspective, we're not saying you're having elective surgery, but is that something you would ever consider?
I guess I would, but I'd have to feel confident about it. And, you know, just listening to John talk about the hospital there was the doctors being U.S. trained. It does give me a greater sense of confidence. I mean, I have a slight hesitation to leave the country, I think, and have something done. There are, you know, stories on either side of that, I'm sure, and I'd love to hear your positive story about it. So,
You're a maybe.
I'm a maybe. Yeah.
And most people are that way.
Mm-hmm.
It depends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, John, I know you have an innovative program that basically helps allay people's fears or overcome some of their concerns by having an advocate that kind of helps. Like, can you explain what that is?
Yes, I'd be glad to. But first, I do want to say that these hospitals have been built from the ground up to cater to international patients. They're like walking in the Ritz-Carlton. It's not like walking into a typical U.S. hospital. You walk into luxury, and you're taken care of better than you can imagine. In one wing of a hospital, we may see 8 RNs. You're lucky to have one RN on a whole floor here in the United States. Mm. Then we add in the patient, concierge, and advocate. So once someone finds out they need to have surgery, from that point on, they have an assigned person that quarterbacks every step of the way to make sure their questions are answered, that their healthcare professionals here are connected with the healthcare professionals at the destination. We incorporate technology as well so that there's a continuity of care that's 360 degrees that incorporates electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. Many doctors don't have electronic medical records yet. That's a standard component. So we collect the records. If they need to be digitized, we digitize them and put them into the system so that the doctors can collaborate around the case and around the actual case records. And then we have a concierge person, a destination ambassador, that meets you when you arrive.
Wow. Get so they handle the logistical end of getting you to and from.
Absolutely.
Not just the health care.
Well, our patient advocate, once you decide to travel, takes care of everything.
Wow.
Travel, surgical, a destination ambassador that meets you at the airplane and sees you on a daily basis, as well as takes care of your companion, because when a companion travels, they need other things as well.
Right.
And we also have a surgical complications insurance so that if there are any issues, you're going to be covered. Like, for example, there's a complication for knee replacements or joint replacements called a malunion. It doesn't matter how well the surgery was done. It can show up two or three months down the road. And that program would probably cover that.
Interesting.
So, you know, from an end-to-end point of view, before you ever return home, your doctor already has the records of your surgery there.
Sounds like a lot more advanced than I really realized.
Yeah, I didn't think it was, you know, that much of a love boat experience. I mean, you know, I sensed it would be more of, you know, my imagination ran wild.
Sounded better and better, didn't it?
Yeah, well, you know.
I got to say there's hospitals in other countries that aren't like that.
Right.
So you have to be careful.
Those are the stories I've heard, and those were populating my brain. So.
But what we have done is we've gone through and credentialed them based on the Joint Commission Accreditation, which is a base level of quality here in the United States. Every hospital here in the United States have to have Joint Commission Accreditation. So that's the start. And then we further credential them. Many of these hospitals are run by U.S. CEOs, part of U.S. health systems.
Huh.
And the kicker is it's a fraction of the cost.
And that's because of the real estate?
It's because of a lot of different things. The cost of living,
right.
The way that the U.S. health system marks up and accounts for risk is very different in other countries.
Interesting.
And so more and more we're starting to see our hospitals have far superior equipment. For example, a 320 slice scanner is almost unheard of in a U.S. hospital. You see 64 slice scanners here in Atlanta. We saw some ads last year. With great pride, these hospitals were saying, well, we've got a 64 slice CT scanner. Our hospitals have 320 slice scanners. And it's a difference between seeing a fraction of your heart and your whole heart. So, you know, these are the kinds of things. These people are focused on customer care because they're a cash business. As a result, they're very focused on outcomes, and these hospitals have as good or better outcomes than the best hospitals here in the United States.
So you're talking about an all-cash system. I mean, you're saying our system in the United States is still heavied down or weighed down by our insurance, the management and processing of bills, and the, you know, 9,000 different people that touch you in the hospital, that they all send you a bill. And you're telling me it's cleaner there because it's all cash.
Absolutely, and it's transparent. You can go to a hospital here in Atlanta and ask, how much is a knee replacement? They can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You ask the hospital that we work with, and we have a case rate. We know exactly how much it costs.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, there's a lot of efficiency in that. There's mm-hmm. probably a dozen reasons why our costs are so high here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them definitely is the bureaucracy of the third-party payer system. So you in one bed with someone else in another bed, you can be paying twice what that other person's paying.
And I think, Dr. Redding, you could probably attest to how much you pay your staff to actually collect from the insurance companies by following up on referral numbers and claims that they were unbundled or bundled. You had no idea why. It's very time intensive, even if they have insurance, to collect money. Is that right?
That's exactly right. There is a very high labor cost to pay employees to process claims from insurance companies. It just adds, and that adds to the total cost passed on to the consumer of the medical care when you have to deal with the getting money from two different sources, the patient and the insurance company, and that just becomes very complex. So there's just a lot of labor involved in that that you don't have in other countries. And of course, in the U.S., a significant cost of medical care is driven by the malpractice insurance that doctors have to pay. I'm not exactly sure how that the malpractice risk works in other countries with this medical tourism, but just in general, malpractice insurance is a heavy burden on doctors in America, and that does drive up healthcare costs that's passed on to the patient.
The risk factors are pretty much the same, and the provisions for legal action are pretty much the same. You still go through the attorneys, and you do all the things you need to do. But, you know, the thing is, when you start talking about a medical travel program, it's very, very different than what you see here. Because of cost, doctors don't have the time they used to have to spend with you because their insurance reimbursements are dropping, their Medicare reimbursements are dropping, and so they have to get through a certain number of patients every day. And as a result, the personal care isn't there. You know, you kind of say, and a lot of times when you see a surgeon, chances are you didn't meet them before 10 minutes before that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have a personal relationship there. And then they say, you know, tell you to go to the hospital at this time, and you got to navigate your way through the hallways, and you're kind of on your own. Whereas with a program such as ours, you have a personal advocate that takes care of you every step of the way, gets to know your family, makes sure that all the questions are answered, all the needs are met, catches things in the middle. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a U.S. hospital and an orderly or a PA has missed something easy that they should have caught because they're running. The cost has affected them. Mm-hmm. They have X number of things mm-hmm. to
Everyone's
do
in, getting squeezed.
In an 8-hour day.
Sure. Yeah.
So when you have those personal advocates that wraps around the system, personal advocates here before you go, personal advocates when you're there having your procedure, they're checking. They're making sure. And all that goes into a comprehensive patient interaction system so everybody knows what the other's doing
right. Instead
of the right hand not knowing what the left hand's doing, which is so common here in the United States.
Right. Well, I'm going to wrap up our discussion today. It certainly has been a lively one, and we've touched on many aspects, including social media and people shopping around using various tools that we have that are new to us. We've talked about the self-insurance aspect of it with employers taking on the cost of it themselves. We've talked about how it's affected private practices and changing demographics for the doctor's office and choices in educating ourselves as consumers with Kim. So I'd like to leave the listeners with, instead of a winding session about all the muck and mire we're in, kind of going around the table, if you had one or two tips of things that you could leave the listeners with as they think about their choices they're making and how they're spending dollars, what would they be? Why don't we start with you, Dr. Redding?
Well, my main take-home message is to be familiar with the details of your insurance plan, mainly the copay, the coinsurance, your deductible, and your out-of-pocket maximum. Also, it's a great idea to keep your insurance card with you in your wallet or in your purse, because frequently when you make appointments, you have to know more than just, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield or I have Humana. You need to know what type of plan you have. Some hospitals are in-network with certain Humana plans and not other Humana plans, and that goes with all insurance companies. So know the name of your plan, and it's impossible to memorize every detail, but keep your card with you in your wallet or your purse.
Very good. And John, how about you?
Well, I think the most important thing is you are responsible for your health care. Don't abdicate that responsibility to a health care professional. They're just too busy these days. As someone who's responsible for my own health care, I have to make sure that my doctors are always on the same page. Now, an electronic medical record system helps with that. I also have to make sure that I'm getting good information, so evidence-based information in addition to the social kind of information is important. Third, shop around. Find other alternatives. Don't skimp on quality, but do find other alternatives, because you'll find you can get better quality for less cost, and it might just be around the corner.
Very good. And Kim?
No, I agree. I'm going to add on to that, because if you do your research and look around, you just might find something. And I have used the HealthGate website to find services. In fact, I recently purchased for my daughter, who's 15 and plays a lot of sports, a physical off of the HealthGate website, and we went, and I might add that that office did have a flat-screen TV, so there you go. And he did, too.
Can't assume.
He did do a great job. He was wonderful with her, you know. It didn't take very long. It was, I think, about half the cost as it would have been if I'd taken her to our regular pediatrician. So, you know, I just had to look a little further and be a little more creative and think outside the box.
Very good. Appreciate that. So our guests can reach the we can connect them. Dr. Redding, why don't you tell us how our listeners could connect with you?
Well, our office phone number is 404-355-0078, but our website is www.reddingallergycenter.com, and that's R-E-D-D-I-N-G, allergycenter.com. We're located in Buckhead near the exit of West Paces Ferry off of I-75.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And John, how can we reach you?
Our phone number is 678-528-8511, and our website is www.medserverglobal.com.
Okay, very good. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, HealthGate. HealthGate is an online medical site where consumers can find medical content, great providers, and savings offers. So you can visit them at www.healthgate.com. Thanks to all the guests. It's been a lively discussion. We look forward to seeing you back here sometime on a different topic. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks so much.